Welcome into Crossing Broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, I owe you an apology. I do. I am sorry. I'm sorry that the show didn't start on time today. It actually started even later than the normal not on time with me in charge of the Monday show. I don't have my coffee with me. I don't have my water with me. I had a contractor here. We love our contractor. Great guy. We talked for a long time. And then I realized, I looked at my watch, and I saw a message, a frantic message from Craig, who was like, yo, dude, are you alive? Where are you at? When is this happening? Are we doing the show? And I went, oh, shit. And I said, yeah, you know what? Let's set it for 12:15. And then like an idiot, because I have no concept of time, I said, you know what? The hell with it. Just hit the countdown. Craig didn't say to me, yeah, I hit the countdown. We're good. So I kind of thought maybe he did set it to 12:15. Maybe he didn't see it. And then I came downstairs, and I really quick, I meant to hit the bathroom on my way down, thinking 12:15, and I pulled up StreamYard, where we do our thing, and I saw that the countdown had a minute left, and boy, was it a good time. Boy, was it a good thing I took a look, because otherwise, you guys would either be looking at a blank screen or Craig, and Craig is a handsome guy, fresh cut, fantastic. But anyway, I want to thank everybody for coming in, and it's going to be a fun time today. Today's show is going to kind of be all over the place, okay? So we have to be kind of clear here, and I'm going to do this at the risk of having people drop off the show, and people who are joining us on YouTube and on Twitter and on Facebook, I might lose a bunch of you right now, okay? I'm not talking about the Eagles today because I don't find anything really compelling about the Eagles. The Phillies, we can touch on very briefly. They kind of bounced back, winning 2 out of 3 over the weekend, which is good stuff. But that's not where my head's at today. My head today is a little bit more basketball. My head today is a little bit more of the free-falling Flyers. And my head today is, well, you might see it on my shirt if you're watching live on the stream. WrestleMania 40 was this past weekend. I was at night one. I have some thoughts. We'll get there later in the show. So if you hate the pro wrestling, you don't have to deal with the pro wrestling until the end. But you know what? We're here. We're here. Let's get into it. Because there are a few things that are happening in the basketball scene that I think are important to go over. One, Tyrese Maxey last night, double OT, 52 points, becomes, he's now one of, I think, only 7 players to have ever had 3 50-point games in a single season for the Sixers. He's the first guy to score 50 on the road for the Sixers since a guy that you might have heard of, Allen Iverson. Now, while this Allen Iverson fellow might not have been as good as peak Russell Westbrook, he at least was a very good player, and apparently a lot of people liked him. So there you go. I've said for a long time, Tyrese Maxey reminds me so much of AI, but like with better shot selection and a more efficient player. But his ability to finish at the rim, and this is the thing that like people always kind of go a little bit too crazy with, but like Tyrese Maxey's ability to finish in traffic at the rim is the best I've seen in a guard, specifically a Sixers guard, since Allen Iverson. Absolutely fantastic. There we go. Craig is on it. So Craig is starting out a Monday, making that $295,000 salary. And he's on it today. So here you go. This is from, I believe this is this crossingboard.com? Yes, that is crossingboard.com. Okay. Take us back down there, Craigles. So there we go. The best part is Maxey has had 350 pieces this season. He scored 52 last night, 51 in Utah on February 1st, and 50 against the Pacers back in November. He and Embiid both have 3 games this year, 50-plus points, which is the first time in NBA history that teammates have had 350 pieces each in a single season. The only other Sixers to have 3-plus 50-point games in the same year are also Iverson and Chamberlain. See, there you go. That's right, third. So I know that there are some people who really, they get themselves a little bit too upset and too stuck in the minutia of things where it's like you're cherry picking stats. But in fairness, 50 points, yes, it came in double OT. I get it. He didn't do it in a 48 minute, you know, game. Does it matter? No, of course it doesn't matter. Totally fine. Guy goes out, gets 52, and he continues to prove why he is easily, when Joel Embiid's not in, he's easily the number one option. And you could even make the case, I'll say this right now. You let me know over in the comments section. And Craig, I think the next part of you making $315,000 a year is to have you run the YouTube polls over on the Crossing Broad page. I'll handle it for right now because I just threw this at you in the last second. But I want to know from people because I have a very specific thought. And I know I'm right, but I want people to just kind of reaffirm me. I really appreciate that sometimes. I want to know from the fine folks of the Delaware Valley, where do you or who do you think should take the last shot in a game? Who do you actually trust to get it done in the last seconds of a game? And I'm going to throw two options into the poll. Should it be Tyrese Maxey or should it be Joel Embiid? And I want you to think about that because I think it's very clear. I know that there are some people who lean one way, and I'm not going to affect the poll here. I'm going to throw this here first, and I apologize to some of the fine folks who are listening way after the fact in the podcast feed on Apple Podcasts and Pandora and Spotify and wherever they get their podcasts, but not Google Podcasts because it's dead. So you don't get to interact in this poll, okay? And if you're listening on Spotify, you can go into the little feedback form that some people fill out after every episode, and you can let me know there. I'll be happy to bring up on the next show. But final shot in a game, who do you trust as a Sixers fan? Do you want Tyrese Maxey getting that shot, or do you want Joel Embiid to get that shot? Now, I didn't do due diligence here, okay? And I'm sorry to everybody, okay? I didn't pull the numbers. I didn't pull the clutch time stats, okay? I'm just going off of eye test, off of feel, and off of shot selection. And if it's me, I would rather give that final shot to Tyrese Maxey than Joel Embiid. I'll say it as a blanket statement. From deep, Maxey. Mid-range, maybe that's where Embiid does have the free throw line jumper on lock. But I'd still probably rather have Maxey with the ball in his hands. The more versatile player who can score from every level. And again, who I think makes better clutch time decisions than Joel Embiid. But I want to know, looking over at the poll right now as the results are coming in, 83% so far say Tyrese Maxey. By the way, if you can't participate in the poll or you're kind of, you know, wondering from time to time why you can't comment, the only reason that you can comment is if you have a YouTube account. If you have a Gmail account, you know, just sign in over on YouTube and you can participate in these things. We'll bring your comments up on the screen. But Craig, I don't know what this, this is a beautiful thing you've done here. This like new view. We don't even use this on Snow the Goalie. I don't even know where this is in our settings. I'm going to have to look. Craig is teaching me something. It's a beautiful thing. We're going to keep the poll up. Yeah, just keep. Whoa, Craig, don't you keep moving that around. All right, there we go. Whoa, don't get me too excited, Craig. All right, we got a big day ahead. Got the national championship tonight. All right. Does the poll have a sponsor? Yeah, no, it doesn't. Maybe it could, though. If Kincaid could take a few minutes out of his day from watching, you know, 7th division Belgian soccer players who Ernst Tanner might target next summer for the Philadelphia Union, perhaps he can pound the pavement. Get a sponsor for the poll. If you're out there and you own a small business and you're like, hey, I'd like to sponsor a show that gets a nice podcast feed audience, a decent live audience, a very engaged live audience, like Ford will buy whatever you end up selling. So if you're a sponsor and you want some easy sales, I can guarantee you that Ford, and probably Nico and T from the TO3, at least them, and Phil Efan, I see Joe Papel's here. I think all these people, they'll buy whatever you're going to sell. You know, sponsor the poll. Sponsor the show. Live your best life. Anyway, Tyrese Maxey, big game. And now we get to the part of the show where Ford spends the entire time in the comments getting himself all worked up about the standings and about where the Sixers are going to land. So as of recording on April 8th, the year of our Lord, 2024, the Philadelphia 76ers are 7th in the East. 44 and 35. They are a single game behind the Indiana Pacers for the sixth seed. Now, as many of you have paid attention to this over the last few weeks, I've been saying, if you're the Sixers, you want that sixth seed and you want to play Cleveland. Well, Cleveland has fallen off. And, you know, it's just kind of the way that it works. But three teams right now have 46 wins, Orlando, Cleveland, Indiana. I still think that there's a chance that Philly could get that sixth seed. I really do. I know that Embiid isn't playing every night. I know that apparently it's like too much to ask the guy to play 24 minutes and then come back out for the next game. But it's fine. It's fine. No big deal. They got the win. That's what it matters. Yes, it came in double OT. No, it shouldn't have taken that long. You take the win. They don't ask how. They ask how many. I learned that from Bundy. See, I'm learning. Learning as a human being. But I do think that the Sixers still will have a shot to get into that sixth seed. And again, you don't want to be in the 4-5. 4-5 plays Boston in round two. Boston will absolutely murder the Philadelphia 76ers or any other team that they run into. I actually don't know what the if we're trying to figure out a path to get the Sixers into the second round and maybe to the conference final and then somehow by divine intervention or something to the NBA Finals, the only way I can see it happening is if Boston gets upset somewhere. And I don't know what team it would be that I think would actually give them a good run and is in that fall line where you could see a team drop from a 4, a 5, or a 6 down to 8 and give Boston a run. You think maybe Heat culture, maybe Miami could muck up a series and it could get really ugly. It could go 6 games, it could go 7 games, and like maybe playoff Jimmy Butler. James Butler, the only adult in the room, as Brett Baron once said. Like maybe that's where it's at. But like, do I think Indiana can beat Boston? No. Do I think Cleveland can? No. Do I think the Knicks would be an interesting matchup? Yes. Do I think they could do it? No. And do I think the Knicks are going to fall from 4 down to 8? No, I don't see it. T from the TO3, by the way, who resides down in Florida in the Sunshine State, says Heat culture is fraudulent. I'm going to have to report you to Dan Le Batard. I think that's just how this works. In the 7th seed, they would play Milwaukee as of right now. I don't know if they can beat the Bucks. Again, it's Glenn Rivers in a big series, so I like your chances if you're the opponent. Giannis is a tough matchup, and the Sixers don't have a guy who can match up to Giannis. You're not going to put Embiid on him the entire game. And for as much as people in this town really did grow to hate Ben Simmons was probably your best bet to be able to somehow contain the athletic freak that is Giannis Antetokounmpo. Dame Lillard, though, doesn't scare me as much anymore. We can all, I think, breathe a very nice sigh of relief that that didn't happen, that the Tyrese Maxey for Damian Lillard trade didn't work out. Dame has not been everything that they hoped he would be. So anyway, positive. We look week over week. The Sixers are in better shape this week than I think they were a week ago. And as long as you're able to have Joel Embiid for a few of these games down the stretch, I do still think that you have a way to avoid the Celtics and potentially even get yourself into a position where you wouldn't see them until the conference final. I'm getting way ahead of myself, and I apologize to everyone because I'm supposed to remain objective. I just want to see some winning basketball. Is it wrong that I just want to see some winning basketball? Is it wrong that I've been fine to just not take in the Sixers the way that I historically have this season? And I just want to get myself hyped up. Is it okay for me to look forward to a team that plays at Wells Fargo Center, not shitting the bed down the stretch with a playoff chance on the line? Can I please? Because you know, and we have to talk about it now, the other team, the team whose parent company owns the arena, that team vomiting all over themselves. Losers of 7 straight games. Losers of a back-to-back against 2 piss-poor teams. And now a team that, I have to be honest, I started having conversations a week and a half ago with a few local establishments. I was looking at bars and some restaurants because I thought, you know what? The Philadelphia Flyers are going to make the playoffs. They're in the driver's seat. They got six points that they needed from the 7-game gauntlet, and if you just play 500 hockey down the stretch, they're going to make the playoffs. Now, would they win the first round? Probably not. Could Torts pull off one of the Torts miracles where he pulls off a really huge, unexpected first round upset like he did with the Columbus Blue Jackets a few years ago? Yeah, I thought, hey, maybe. All right, I'm not trying to get too excited, but I did think, hey, playoff hockey. And as somebody who, like, was down there covering the team in the 2018 season, which was dog shit, and covering in 2019 and 2020, and including some of those bubble games. Remember when they had all the seats tarped off and there were, like, 40 people that were not players and coaches allowed in the building? I was, like, one of those people. I was one of very few media people who were sitting there. That's when Ant was, like, pretty much on life support, almost dead from COVID. Legitimately almost dead. I'm not kidding. Sometimes I'm a little bit hyperbolic. And almost died. Like, we got the email from his sister that was pretty much like, he's not doing well. And it doesn't look like there's a lot of hope. It was bad. It's very bad. Ant doesn't remember it because, you know, he was pretty much dead. So he just doesn't have any concept of it. But, like, almost died. Anyway, that was a battle, okay? But I was really doing the work, all right, down there in the COVID seats, okay? To have been around some of those teams and to have gone through covering what was never a real competitive team, the whole time, right, we go into the season, and I said, they're going to be a really bad team. They'll have Sean Couturier back. They'll get Cam Atkinson back. The Carter Hart thing was looming, right? but nobody really knew what was going to happen, if he was going to be gone, if he was going to stay. The indications were kind of like, not great. But I had these moments throughout the season where it's like, all right, I thought they were going to be really bad. Torts got more juice out of that orange than he ever had any right to. Blood from a stone than he had any right to. And like, has he been perfect? No. I've been just as critical of John Tortorella's tactics and his decisions and the mind games this year as I was last year, as I was of Alain Vigneault, and as I was of Mike Yeo and Dave Hackstall and Scott Gordon, right? Even if these guys were interims, like Scott Gordon and Mike Yeo. But like, they've been better this whole season. They've been able to get wins that they don't not that they don't deserve, because they outplayed in a lot and they out-hustled in a lot of those games. But games that on paper they had no right being in, they won those games. And 6 points in the 7-game gauntlet wasn't incredible, okay? I'm not going to sit here and act like, oh, 6 points is... No, it wasn't incredible, but it was passable. You have to get something from that stretch. And it was a really rough stretch. 6 points of potential 14. And then you say, all right, 500 the rest of the way. They appeared as though they had avoided the 10-game losing streak that has just kind of become part of the fabric of being a Philadelphia Flyers fan, right? There are only a few things in this world that are guaranteed. Death, taxes, Flyers 10-game losing streak. They were so close to not having it. And right now, 7 straight losses, 4 games to go. They could get to 10 games. They could still get that 10-gamer in right before the end of the year. And in doing so, they would fuck themselves because they were this close, in the rebuilding season to making the playoffs. They held on to a Scott Laughton not once, but twice. Not just last offseason, but ahead of the trade deadline. So much so that Danny Briere, in his post-trade deadline press conference, said, we're not accepting fair market value for Scott Laughton because of his intangibles and what he brings to the team, leadership, all that. We need to be blown away. It has to be well above market value. Okay, they did that twice. They held on to him twice. And you go off of reports from last offseason, it was a first-round pick. Based on what the market was around the trade deadline this year, Laughton hadn't played particularly well leading up to the deadline. Was it a first? Could it have been a high second? Could it have been a conditional? I don't know. I'm not sure. Ant kind of waffles on it a little bit on our show. But high picks, okay? They held on to Laughton. Mark Stahl brought no value on ice this year for the team. He was somebody that you signed with the thought that leadership, establish the culture, trade him off at the deadline. You couldn't. Okay, fine. Nick Seeler. They said, Nick Seeler has been so good for us, the intangibles, we're going to extend him. The contract isn't as bad as it could have been. But for a rebuilding team, I said, we don't think we can, like, you don't think you could develop a guy or find the guy on the scrap heap that you could bring in, rah-rah culture guy? No, okay. Granted, block shots. Not a lot of guys want to block a puck. Okay. Nick Seeler, he loves it. He eats that shit up for breakfast. Okay, fine. They made one trade at the deadline, one big one that sent an asset out, because they did bring in Eric Johnson, who admitted as soon as he got here, my best days are behind me. That's not what he talks like. My best days are behind me. Don't expect a lot. Okay, fine. And in fairness, he set the bar low, and he's had some games where he's gone a little bit above it, but mostly he's been at that line. They traded one guy. They traded Sean Walker away. Sean Walker got dealt. And when they traded him away, it was a tricky position they put themselves in, because Walker was a guy who outperformed expectations, was a guy that was looked to be a bit of a throwaway in that deal in the offseason. And he proved that he was arguably their best defenseman this season. Travis Sanheim has been very up and down. The ups have, I think, outweighed the downs, but he's kind of been all over. Walker was steady. And in fact, Walker was so good and so steady that perhaps he even made Nick Seeler look better, which is, again, why it's kind of confounding to have done the extension in the rebuild, whatever. I'm not relitigating all this, but I kind of am, for those who might not have been aware of what's been going on. So Philly goes through the trade deadline. They make this one big deal. They get a first-round pick for Walker, which is sensational value. All right, he's a UFA. If you really wanted to, you could bring him back in the offseason. And maybe they will. Who knows? But they didn't go into that deadline acting like a rebuilding team that's going to try to sell off as many guys and sell off as many assets as they could. They didn't do that. And at the time, I said, that's really risky. And the number one narrative that would get kind of thrown back is Well, they have to, they owe it to the guys in that locker room to go for a playoff run, to give them what they need to make that playoff push, not to sell off future assets or high value assets, right? But the idea was, don't hamstring the team from being able to make the playoffs. Walker gets dealt, and the defense fell apart. The blue line fell apart. Seeler got hurt. Drysdale got hurt. They didn't have guys in the organization that they felt they could trust right away. They weren't enamored with Attard and Jennings. And so all of a sudden, you started seeing Mark Stahls and the Eric Johnsons of the world that were getting in the lineup. And it was very hit or miss, and in a lot of cases, more miss than hit. And I do all of this to say, I was fine because you had very clearly made it the objective that, like, we're not selling pieces off for fair market value. It looks like they're trending to the playoffs. Give those guys a shot. They weren't going to be able to bottom out realistically and have everything fall apart to a point where you're in, like, the top seven picks. Fine. But what has happened over the last couple of weeks is just so confounding. Because a team that that was able to get wins in games that they had no right getting wins in on paper, that team is just gone. The chutzpah they played with, the cajones, the huevos that they played with, you would think they had it in them to at least play 500 hockey down the stretch. And they didn't. They've puked all over themselves. For seven back, and you could play like a really fun little game, and I'm going to mock you now, all right? You, whoever you are, if this is you, all right? I'm going to put on the orange-tinted glasses here for a second. The people who have, for whatever reason, been willing to accept mediocrity for so long, okay? You look at it, and you say,
well, if you pay attention to things, Flyers did pick up an overtime point. They picked up a point at home against the Islanders, and that was a big point. And prior to that, they also picked up a point on the road against the Rangers, who have had their number.
And I just realized, as I said Rangers in that voice, it sounded like Alpha from Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
Rangers! Aye, aye, aye!
Anyway, the Rangers point was a big – that was a good one. It was on the road. The point against the Islanders was a disgrace because they, again, puked all over themselves, and it took – shot with 38 seconds left, I think it was. Morgan Frost banged home in that game to force overtime, and then overtime was an absolute disaster class. They have four games left. They just blew it by not getting points against Chicago. They blew it by not getting points against Montreal the last time they played on March 28th. They blew it by not getting any points against the Buffalo Sabres, who aren't a good team. They blew it by getting their doors blown off 6-2 on the second half of the back-to-back against the Columbus Blue Jackets. And now you look forward and you go, they pretty much have to win out to have a chance to make the playoffs. They've got to go play at Montreal on Tuesday, a place where they got no points the last time. They have to go play at the Rangers, who are going to dog walk them, because that's what the Rangers do. Sometimes you have a team that you just can't get past. The Phillies for a long time, it was Miami. Or the Florida Marlins, Jeff Conine, the Philly killer, right? Then you're at home against the Devils, Wayne Simmons night, and then you're at home against the Capitals. Well, the Devils are pretty much out of it, but they're going to want to play spoiler. That last game, I mean, if the Flyers somehow win the next three games, preferably in regulation, right? Not that it really matters. The Rangers are in. The Canadiens are out. But maybe it's a little bit more of that for you in here, in the heart, in the chest. Maybe up here, a little bit mentally, especially with the Rangers game. If you can win the next three, then there's a chance at that game at the end of the season when you welcome Washington to town, that could be for the final wild card spot. There's a chance. But it shouldn't have come down to that. That is what is so upsetting. And by the way, depending on how much you're into rivalries in the division, not only were you unable to put your foot on the throat of New Jersey the last time you played, like, they're really not in it now at this point with 79 points with four games to play, but they're close enough. They failed to put their foot on the throat of the Penguins, who are now level with them on points and have a game in hand. They were unable to put their foot on the throat of the Islanders, who now sit third in the Met, 2 points ahead with one game in hand. Their inability to put these teams away, it's like letting a guy off the mat. It's like being an MMA fighter and saying, get back up. Let's keep going. I'm not finishing you off on the ground. It's insane. Their inability to have a killer instinct is what ultimately could tank their entire chance of making the playoffs. And it's a damn shame because it never should have happened. They never should have been in this position. They should have gotten those points against bad teams, and then maybe you falter down the stretch, but you still make the playoffs. You know, Ford says over on YouTube, it's fool's gold, and it's hard to disagree. I can look at a myriad of factors and say, well, the Walker trade really did disrupt the blue line, and them losing Drysdale for as long as they did and Seeler for as long as they did, that was hard, and they really weren't able to overcome it. But they've also had a lot of guys no-show, right? Like, Torts did the unrecommended, unnecessary gamble of scratching Couturier. And you get a bunch of mouth breathers on Twitter who say, oh, well, Sean Couturier, you know, he's not playing that well anyway. He sucks. Sean Couturier sucks. That contract sucks. Without Sean Couturier for the first 4 months of the season, you had no fucking chance of making the playoffs. So the mouth breathers need to zip it. They need some of that hostage tape or whatever it is that helps you breathe at night. That's what they need. Because people, some people, are too dumb to look macro and say, this is what got us here, and now we're paying for it here. We rode Sean Couturier until the wheels fell off, and then Torts benches him, scratches him. People get themselves all worked up, okay? I look at it and I say this. You said rebuild. You made minimal moves. You traded an unrestricted free agent coming up for a first-round pick, which is great. But you have effectively, if the wheels do fall off here, and even if they don't, you miss the playoffs, you're in the same place that you were with a Chuck Fletcher team and the same place you were with a Ron Hextall team. You're in purgatory. And it's not hard to see it. And yes, you can sell yourself on the fact that, hey, up until we puked all over ourselves in seven straight games down the stretch, and maybe more, up until that point, we were a playoff team. Nobody thought we could do it. Torts had the press conference a week ago. He said, we're here. We're here. Well, apparently Torts was here. I don't know where the hell the rest of the team was. You got a lot of guys no-show, and you have I'm not saying anybody's dogging it, but that collective chutzpah that this team played with for the entire season, the underdog thing, not there. It's gone. I don't know if it'll come back this year. And if you miss the playoffs and you don't draft in the top 10, if you don't get lottery luck, it's hard to look at this season and say that it's not much more than a lot of the same. You know, it's culture, culture, culture. Okay. Down the stretch where that culture is supposed to matter and you're supposed to galvanize the team, the coach took a risk that he didn't need to take. It might not have played well in that room. They got immediate returns for two games, and then it all kind of fell apart. Makes you think. All right, so we did that. Want to just make a quick note here because there's some fun theories out there. You got UConn and Purdue tonight in the national championship. I don't have a lot of commentary about it. I will say that I'm sad that NC State's out. I love a good Cinderella. I also spend most of my day either writing or editing sports betting content, and I can tell you that anecdotally, having a North Carolina team in the tournament deep, a Cinderella team deep in the tournament, is good for business here at XL Media, Crossing Broad. Everybody, we love North Carolina players who sign up for legal online sports books. So the idea that there's no North Carolina team in there anymore makes me sad. Also, the fact that it's two number one seeds sucks, okay? I don't look at either of these teams, and there's not a guy that stands out that I say, like, I want to watch these two guys go head-to-head. If you're a college basketball junkie, maybe you feel that way. I, as somebody who only watches college basketball really around the tournament, I could not care less. But I do want to go to what Nico just said on YouTube, Dawn Staley. Undefeated season for South Carolina. I watched that game. Caitlin Clark, 18 points in the first quarter, all-time record for a single quarter in national championship history. Fantastic. 3 points in the second quarter. And then it looked like she was kind of deferential down the stretch, which I thought was weird. If it's me and I'm losing by 9 points in the fourth quarter, I want that scene from Hey Arnold. Pass the ball to Tucker. Pass the ball to Tucker. Except Caitlin. Pass it to her. And it was like, I think a minute and a half left. She chucked a heat check three from like the hash, right? And front rimmed it. And it felt like that was the end. I was kind of sad. I'll be honest with you. I was sad that it didn't end up being more competitive down the stretch. But, you know, hats off to Dawn Staley. Can I throw a concept out there? Can I throw out a hypothetical? If you're Villanova, and you've watched your program go from a powerhouse with Jay Wright in charge, a team that could win the national championship, a team that was making Final Fours, a team that was making everything look easy. If you're Villanova, you're really going to run it back with Kyle Neptune again? Really? That's the play? You're sure? Top program, national championship, Elite Eight, Final Fours, a place that was becoming a real target for players to consider after a lot of years of irrelevancy. Jay Wright leaves, Kyle Neptune comes in, the whole thing starts to fall apart. This past year is a disgrace, all right? I have no dog in this fight. I have no horse in this race. I don't care. I grew up in Schuylkill County. You think I give a shit? You think I care if Temple wins or St. Joe's wins or LaSalle wins or Villanova wins? I care if they win. I'll support any Philly team. I don't care if Kyle Scott wants to watch Temple burn. I don't care if Kyle Pagan wants to watch Nova burn. If I see Philly teams in the tournament, I'm going to cheer for them. And I don't feel bad about it. But you have to get the teams in the tournament. And you had at least one that was a guarantee to make the tournament and go deep. Kyle Neptune ain't getting it done. Is Dawn Staley not worth a thought? If you are Villanova, you don't want to, you can't conceptually hand it over to her? Now, look, Dawn Staley might want to stay. She might want to continue to grow the women's game, and she might want to go for another perfect season. But, like, it's right there for you. Every time the Sixers have had a coaching opening, like the last two times, when Nick Nurse got hired, when Doc Rivers got hired, I think even when Brett Brown got hired, there were thoughts of, like, hey, what about Dawn Staley? If I'm Villanova and I want to get relevant again, you tell me why. I can tell you that I think it certainly can't hurt because Kyle Neptune's not getting it done. I need somebody to give me a reason that Dawn Staley doesn't deserve a look, or that why Dawn Staley couldn't lead a Nova team into the field of 68. Like, really? I haven't seen a single person give a legitimate reason why she couldn't do it. And by the way, this isn't me kind of like banging the drum of like, we need a woman to coach the men's team. I'm not talking about representation here. I'm saying Dawn Staley's a fucking good basketball coach. Just led South Carolina to an undefeated season. Like, what are we doing here? If you're Nova, if you're a Nova booster, get a new coach and maybe take Dawn Staley if she's interested. It's a huge win. Somebody says it's a huge PR win. I think it's a good fucking basketball win. Get somebody in who has pedigree. Get somebody in here who gets this city. Get somebody in here who could probably get you into the tournament and, by God, tactically can probably coach you into at least a Sweet 16, which is sure as shit better than where... Did Nova play in the NIT? Is that where they were? Craig? Is that where they were? Because Kyle Scott, like, the last few regular season games was in the Slack saying a lot of things about, oh, Nova, Nova's back, Wildcats, blah, 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 blah. And then as they shit the bed and they missed the tournament, I didn't hear anything else. Then it was Kyle Scott was moving, and he didn't have a TV, and he didn't have internet, and he caught the last couple minutes on his phone on YouTube TV. So I don't actually know. Did Nova play in the NIT? I think that's where they played, right? Because they weren't in the big tournament. They weren't in my bracket. Not my bracket. Okay, Dawn Staley. Now, I also bring that up because Villanova had a coach who led them to a national championship win, who led them to Final Fours, Jay Wright. Fantastic, by the way. Fantastic on TV. What a hire by CBS. John Calipari just left Kentucky to sign a new deal with Arkansas, or as we like to call it, Arkansas. Calipari's gone. You want to talk about a job that coaches would kill for? Kentucky. Yes, the expectations are incredibly high. Yes, John Calipari has done an incredible job of getting that program into a spot where it is a destination, no matter what. You deal with that pressure because that's a job you aspire to earn. If you're Kentucky, you call in Jay Wright? I would. I think if I were Villanova, I would have picked up the phone after the first year of Kyle Neptune and begged Jay Wright to come back up the Brinks truck and give him whatever he wants. I still have that little hypothetical. I've thrown this out there for years. If Jay Wright's ever going to go to the NBA, it's going to be the Knicks. He likes Madison Square Garden. He likes the Big East. That's the tournament. Shy of that, could Jay Wright look to make a move to an all-time program to a Kentucky? I think it's worth a conversation. Will he do it? I have no idea. Will he have that conversation? I have no idea. Will Kentucky reach out? I would have to imagine they would be stupid if they didn't. Little fun idea out there. Dawn Staley goes to Nova. Jay Wright comes out of retirement, goes off to Kentucky. Wouldn't that be fun? Sean O'Neill says she can go there too. I don't know if Dawn Staley would go to Kentucky. That would be a very ballsy move. A very gutsy move. So, and Sean also mentions here, he's probably out because of the portal and NIL. Jay Wright has had some interesting things to say about it and what it's done to the playing field. And he could be right. And a lot of guys now, they want to go to schools where they can make a lot of money now and they can jump to the pros. And maybe it's hard to get a bunch of guys to stay in school like Jay Wright was able to do with a lot of his best players, to keep them there 2, 3, maybe even 4 years to go after a national championship. Maybe the NIL has made that harder and the portal has made that harder. So we'll see. Is that official T from the TO3? Is Billy Donovan in Kentucky now? I saw that he was a name that was thrown out there. I have not been on the Twitter much this morning. Let me see. Is that official? No, he's just a candidate. From what I see right now, unless there's been a big move here, I believe Kentucky, the last time I saw it, was Billy Donovan was thought. Rick Pitino, perhaps, could have been interested in that job. Okay. Now, I want to make sure that I didn't leave anything else out that I wanted to talk about today, except for, well, where I was this weekend. And now we enter the portion of the show where I tell you right now that there is a place that I'm going to go into far much more detail and far much more depth about this next topic. We're going to do kind of like a cursory look at it because it was covered over on Crossing Broad, okay? But I will tell you right now that if you are interested in deep dives on pro wrestling and on what happened this weekend at WrestleMania, I'm going to direct you over to It's Just Wrestling, okay? The wrestling podcast. It's right there. See it on the screen if you're watching. That's the channel you want to go find on YouTube at It's Just Wrestling Pod. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts, over on Facebook, on Twitter as well. We're going to go deep dive into what happened over the weekend on WrestleMania. So I want to take a look at it today just from a little bit of a cursory glance. I was there at night one, as you could tell. Got the WrestleMania shirt. Look, I'll even
show it off a little bit.
So WrestleMania 40 was in town this weekend. Night one, I had no intention of going to WrestleMania. I didn't think it was going to happen. Tickets were crazy expensive in the weeks leading up. And I finally, on the night before, so it's Friday night, my wife looks at me and she goes, "Hey, my coworker's husband is trying to sell his tickets to WrestleMania." And I looked at her, and my wife and I, we are almost always totally in lockstep. We like share brainwaves, okay? I legitimately had a moment where I went, "Did the Matrix break? Why am I just finding out about it now?" There she is. And I was like, did you tell your coworker that like I would think about buying the tickets?" And she was like, "No." "Should I?" I said, "Yes, please." "Text your coworker." Her coworker says, "I'm really sorry. He sold them 10 minutes ago." Okay. So I felt sadness. I felt emotional damage. So I went through Friday night and I went, "All right, the dream is over." Saturday morning, my wife looks at me and she goes, "Buy tickets. Buy tickets to WrestleMania. You got to go." I've been a pro wrestling fan my whole life. There was a little lapse in high school, right? But she was like, "Go get the tickets." I said, "Okay." So I went, I looked, I found there was a guy locally who was trying to sell tickets to the lower level, and they were very expensive tickets. And I appreciate the guy being transparent about how much they were when he bought them and all that. But I'm like, "There's no way I'm paying that much money." So I found some upper level tickets. We went, Craig pulled up the picture. Was it hard to see from where we were at, way up there in the nosebleeds? Yes, it wasn't ideal. But the feeling of being at a WrestleMania, if you're a pro wrestling fan, it was so cool. It was a lot of fun. And if people want to shoot me messages over on Twitter and let me know about how your experience was, all that. Again, I'm going to get into this on It's Just Wrestling, but it was a really cool experience. And then Sunday night, Sunday night, it wasn't that one, but Sunday night, crowd was on fire. Crowd was electric. It also wasn't freezing like it was on Saturday night when people were legitimately leaving with like two matches left on the card because of how cold it was, especially in that upper level. But Sunday was nuts. And the neat thing for Philly is that this iconic moment of Cody Rhodes winning the Universal Championship was done in Philadelphia. And it was a three-year story of him getting to the place that his dad, Dusty Rhodes, never did. And that will always be part of the lore of pro wrestling, that Cody Rhodes finished his story in Philadelphia at WrestleMania 40. It was a really, really cool weekend. A lot of my favorite wrestling podcasts were doing shows all around. And I think in a different universe where I don't have four small kids and I haven't spent the entire hockey season doing the press row show at every home game for the Flyers, I think in another universe, I probably would have gone to a lot of those shows. There was a small part of me that felt like, man, I'm really missing out on this cool opportunity. But again, my wife on the morning of WrestleMania Night 1 says, go get the tickets. I did. I was very excited. It was a lot of fun. And I would encourage people that if you have never been to a WrestleMania, I don't know what the next time it's going to be stateside, because I think a lot of their premium live events are going abroad. They have one in France this summer. They have one in Berlin this summer. I think WrestleMania next year is in Minnesota. I don't know where they're going to be after that. If there's another WrestleMania that happens somewhere close by, I would highly encourage, if you're a pro wrestling fan, to go. But the coolest thing, and Pagan wrote about this, if you're like me, if you're a 90s kid, even if you're not, there was something about that main event where you have John Cena comes out on Cody Rhodes' behalf. The Rock comes out as the final boss. Rock bottoms John Cena. And I'm just expecting the glass to shatter because, by the way, WrestleMania weekend, they were selling John Cena t-shirts. He wasn't announced to be there. There was like a little bit of an Easter egg on a Raw. Made you think he would be there. And they were also selling these smoking skull shirts, like Stone Cold, in Eagles colors. And I was like, holy shit, like they're going to have the Rock's going to come out. He's going to rock bottom, probably Cena. And then the glass is going to shatter and Stone Cold's going to be there. Stone Cold! Stone Cold, my God! But it wasn't. It was the dong, and the Undertaker shows up. Lights go out. Undertaker choke slams The Rock. Lights go out. Lights come back up. Everybody's gone. It's just Cody, Roman Reigns in the ring with a ring with the Mama Rhodes belt from The Rock. Seth Rollins in his Shield gear. Roman can't get over the way that he was betrayed by Seth Rollins in the Shield like a decade ago. He hits Seth Rollins. It sets up. Cody Rhodes wins. Okay. Again, it's just wrestling. Later this week, be doing a show. Might even be today. I don't know. Go subscribe to the channel. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm going to dive into this in deep detail. But it was a cool thing for Philly. And again, it's now one of those things where the fabric of pro wrestling history, a big thing, now resides in Philadelphia. So that's pretty cool. And I thought, you know what? That's a good place to end today. A little bit of positivity. We start with positivity with Tyrese Maxey, 52 points. Then we had not positivity with the Flyers. We had some interesting hypotheticals with the college basketball. Noted the fact that the Phillies have won 2 out of 3. Go listen to Crossed Up. I saw that Bob and Ant recorded an episode, which means I've got to go edit that at some point today and put that in the podcast feed. I think Craig has probably already, if he hasn't done so already, he will shortly, put that video up on the Crossing Broad YouTube account as well. So if you're looking for your Phillies talk, go subscribe to Crossed Up wherever you get your podcasts. And we'll be breaking stuff down about the Flyers all week on Snow the Goalie, on that channel, on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, at Snow the Goalie, and then, of course, wherever you get your podcasts at. So if you want your real deep dive takes on the Flyers, we did an episode yesterday on Snow the Goalie. Crossed Up will have an episode out today for the Phillies. And then we've got It's Just Wrestling at some point either today or later this week, breaking down WrestleMania. Now, Rico, I see you commenting about pro wrestling in YouTube, in the chat. Rico, go subscribe, go ring the bell, and make sure you get notified when I go live with It's Just Wrestling so we can talk about WrestleMania, because I'm excited. I want to get into it. I do. And by the way that the poll is going to end today, who should take the final shot for the Sixers? We put that poll up in the beginning of the show. 65% say Tyrese Maxey, which means two-thirds, roughly, of the audience today who participated in that poll, well, they got it right. And that's all you can hope for. Be back later this week, Thursday, Kevin Kincaid in the lead chair on Crossing Broadcast. Who will he have? Who will his guests be? Who will co-host the show with him? You have to stick around to find out. I think I'm supposed to make the 12:30 run-in in between meetings. This is like the new thing now. I get like the hot tag. I come in. I lay the smack down. And then I leave. And if the show's still going on after my meeting, I come back. It's just how we are rolling with the punches here on Crossing Broadcast. So a big thank you to Craig on the other side of the glass earning that $325,000 salary. A big thank you to all of you who join live on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. And a big thank you to all of you who listen in the podcast feed after the fact. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're watching this show or you found it on a different app and you typically listen on Google Podcasts, Google Podcasts is D-E-D, dead. You got to pick a different app. I said D-E-D, dead, Craig. Don't worry about it. Can't auto-correct it, okay? Everybody have a fantastic rest of your day. Joey, thank you for checking out the show. I appreciate it. Talk to all of you on It's Just Wrestling. Talk to all of you on Snow the Goalie. We'll probably talk to you at some point on Thursday for Crossing Broadcast. In the meantime, interact over on the Twitter at Joy on Broad. Happy to have a chat. And we'll talk to you all very, very soon. Thanks for listening to Crossing Broadcast. Have a great rest of your day. Talk soon.